Hi, good afternoon. This is Nomi Rojas. I am the editor of the region's Life Sciences News Digest. It's called Synapse. Welcome to El Paso Primetime. Today we are talking to Libby Berkeley. She is an MPH, an International Board Certified Lactation Consultant. Today we're going to be talking about breastfeeding. August was Breastfeeding Month, National Breastfeeding Month. Also with us today is Ceci Vasquez. She is a breastfeeding peer counselor at the Baby Cafe, which is a Texas Tech program.
Yes.
Okay. Welcome, you guys.
Hi, Nomi.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I got wind of you guys as I was putting together the Synapse publication that Dr. Berkeley, you got published in a digest called Live Well.
Right.
And you published some myths and facts about breastfeeding. This is a topic that's close to my heart because I have two kids and I breastfed both of them. One of them loved to breastfeed. She breastfed up to 11 months. But my younger one, he's a boy. I mean, he didn't really take too much to it. He just kind of didn't want it anymore around the fifth month. And I was, you know, I tried and tried. And so I wanted to ask you, you know, what do you tell women when they have breastfeeding, you know, issues, like, you know, where the baby doesn't want to breastfeed?
Oh, my goodness. That's such a long answer. Well, first of all, congratulations on breastfeeding for 11 months. That's great.
It was a really great bonding experience. I wish I could have done it longer with the second baby.
Yeah. And a lot of women will say exactly that to me. I do run the Baby Cafe, which is a program of the Texas Tech Gail Grieve Hunt School of Nursing. So I'm a lactation consultant, which means I can actually, you know, take a look and see how it looks to me. But the Baby Cafe is just a kind of a venue. That's how I met Ceci, actually, when she had her first child, which is how many years ago?
He's five now.
He's five. And it's a place where people can come and just be with other women. Maybe that would have helped you. I don't know. Or get help, because I'm the professional in the background. I try and stay in the background.
It's a support group for moms to help each other out. And Libby's there as our professional help, and she's great. I mean, she knows everything from everything.
No, I don't know everything, but I try.
But is it true that some babies just take to breast milk better than other babies?
I wouldn't say breast milk. I would say breastfeeding, because most babies like breast milk.
Okay.
If you put it in a bottle, they'll prefer it over formula usually. It's sweeter. It's more species specific. You know, it's the milk of our species, so it tastes right to their little hard drives. But there are babies that have trouble latching on, and that's actually the bulk of what I see.
Actually, I was going to say that, like, as a peer counselor, non-lactation consultant, and just as a mom in general, I've noticed that some babies don't not like it, but I mean, they have a harder time, or it's so much more work for them. And if they're lazy babies, I mean, we're all different, right? And some babies are just like, I don't want to work that much for it. And I know that happened with my son too, because I breastfed him for 8 months, but I kept pumping for a little bit longer as well. But he was more like, I don't want to try this anymore. So I think it just depends on each baby.
Yeah, because I guess with the bottle, you don't, it drips out pretty much on its own. You don't really have to suck very hard to get it out, but with the breast, they might have to suck before it comes out.
Well, yeah, and it takes a lot more skill. So it's true that some babies will just prefer the bottle, because you could take a bottle. You can do this at home right now. You can take a bottle and turn it upside down, a baby bottle, and liquid just drips out. So like you said, you wouldn't really have to do anything. You can just kind of drain it into their face. And so if I would say, though, as a professional, as a lactation consultant, I would also add to what Ceci said. Sometimes there's a reason, and my job would be to kind of like a detective to try and figure that out, because babies aren't usually lazy. Right. They have reasons, but you just don't know what they are, because they can't talk and they can't tell you.
Okay, because I had so much success with the first baby, and I thought, it can't be me.
No,
it must be the baby. It must be, you know, the baby didn't seem to like it.
Well, it could be, oh my goodness, it could be tongue tie. It could be an infection. Some babies get what probably most moms have seen, thrush infections. So they're like little white patchy things in the baby's mouth. And if you don't really know that the baby's in pain, you might interpret that as he doesn't want me. Right. There could be oversupply. So I see moms that have these like massive supply of milk, and the baby will actually develop almost an aversion because it's unpleasant.
Right. Right. So it's not so much like the breastfeeding in itself, but it's other things that are happening that we would have to like figure out and try to help and support most of all. I mean, whatever mom decides to do, support the mom through those choices.
Yeah.
Because it's hard.
Well, I was kind of reading a little bit of your article, and one of the things that stood out was, and I'll just pose this question to the listening audience and see if they can answer to themselves what they think is the right answer. So here it is, true or false. It is recommended that mothers stop breastfeeding if the mother has a cold or, you know, has, you know, become sick. Is that true or false? And before... Libby, before you answer, just give folks a chance to think about that. Now you can tell us, what is the answer to that question, true or false?
It's obviously false. But I do know that there are still physicians out there recommending that.
Oh, is that right?
Sure. And, you know, family members and like, you know, websites or where people – women get lots of information. They're very informed, right, Ceci?
Yes. There's a lot of blogs and websites you can go to and find out. Oh, I have this. Should I be doing this? I mean...
And it may not be somebody who's professionally trained. It might just be another mom, and maybe she had, you know, a bad experience, and so she's giving advice that's not really evidence-based.
So mothers should continue breastfeeding even though they might have a cold, because the milk has the antibodies that the baby would need that would strengthen their immune system.
Correct. Think of it as a specific vaccine for that specific illness that that mother has.
Right.
It's alive and it's in her milk and it's protecting her baby.
Mm-hmm. And breastfeeding really strengthens the immune system for their whole life. Is that true?
Yes. Yep. And it's dose dependent. So the longer you go, the more immunity you confer to your child.
Mm-hmm. And another myth was if you're taking medication, if the mother is taking medication, then you should not be breastfeeding. True or false?
False. So, but with a caveat,
right.
Because we have books, we look this stuff up. You know, I'm not just remembering all these buckets of medications that are out there. We actually at Texas Tech have a really famous faculty member named Tom Hale. He's in Amarillo. And he's a PhD in pharmacology and a doctor of pharmacology. I don't know. He's got a bunch of degrees. And he writes this book called Medications and Mother's Milk. And he's ours. He belongs to Texas Tech, and we're really proud of him. And he publishes a book every 2 years that's Medications and Mother's Milk, and it's just alphabetized, mm-hmm. and you can just look stuff up. It's not a mystery. There are medications that you can't take when you're breastfeeding, but they're usually things like, you know, chemotherapy. It's not aspirin or amoxicillin.
It's not going to be your cold medicine, most
likely. It's usually not those common medicines. It's usually something pretty strong.
What if a mother is prescribed like an antidepressant?
A lot of moms take antidepressants. They're very common, and most of them are safe.
Okay.
I can look it up. Yeah. They can come see me at the baby cafe.
And there's also an app they can go look up through Texas Tech. If they go through, if you want to go to the Friends of Baby Cafe website, which is a support for the baby cafe moms, there's a link on there that we have on the Thomas Hale in case they want to look up the medication themselves.
Oh, that's themselves. Right. It's a new app, right,
Ceci? It's a new app.
Do you remember what it's called?
I don't remember what the app is called, but I do remember it's $1.99 and it is by Thomas Hale, and they could look that
up. So you just enter the name of your medication?
Mm-hmm. And they'll tell you how safe it is for you.
Oh, that's great.
Dr. Hale does these levels of like how safe, very safe, not safe, moderately safe. And so he tells you, okay, moderately safe. Then you know, you feel a little more comfortable knowing, okay, I can take this. It's moderately safe.
And it also tells you interactions with other drugs. Right. Like if a mom's taking an antidepressant and like a high blood pressure med or, you know, something that's common, sometimes there is an interaction. And you wouldn't want to take one with the other, especially in combination with breastfeeding. And it's all right there on his app.
And so do people just Google El Paso Baby Cafe?
Well, it's not El Paso Baby Cafe anymore. But if you Google that, you'll get us.
Right.
But it's called Galgrave Hunt Baby Cafe because that's what the nursing school is called. So I was happily rescued from potential obscurity when the Gail Reeve Hunt School of Nursing opened in 2011. And so I used to be – I've always been with Texas Tech, but I was in another department. And then I was moved to the nursing school, and so they kind of rescued me. And I'm very grateful to Gail Reeve Hunt School of Nursing.
Because were you – was the baby cafe struggling before financially?
Well, not yet, but it was about to. Okay. Because what happens – and you probably know this – with grant money is it runs out. Mm-hmm. Grant money is what they call soft money. So if you're doing a project with soft money, there's always that risk that you don't have sustainability. You can't keep it up. And we were on 2.5 years, and I had about another half a year of good, solid money. I had CDC money, obesity prevention money,
okay. Money
from the health department, and if here and there. Paso del Norte supported us, the Paso del Norte Health Foundation here in El Paso. But usually those grants are like 3 years. And so then you have to figure out, how am I going to keep this up? And that's how we did it. The nursing school took us in.
And is that the only baby cafe in El Paso?
No, there's three.
Where are the other two?
There's Del Sol and Las Palmas both have baby cafes.
Okay.
Las Palmas baby cafe is actually kind
Fox
of down.
Plaza,
yeah, yeah, it's in Fox Plaza.
Fox Plaza, I believe.
And the Del Sol?
Del Sol has one in Anli Trevino. And
okay.
I think it's
right across from Hanks High School.
Yeah.
That much I know.
They're
only
their
open
teen center.
In the teen center.
I've seen that.
Okay. So they're inside there and they operate from there.
And they're only open once a week, each of them. But again, you can Google all of this. You can go to the Friends of El Paso Baby Cafe as the Facebook page. Mm-hmm. We also have a page inside the Texas Tech web pages, so you can look for us there. And we also have a bigger group in El Paso, breastfeeding advocates.
More lactation consultants and
every
supporters.
Every lactation consultant in El Paso, well, almost all of us, are in a group called the BBC, which is the Binational Breastfeeding Coalition.
Oh, okay.
And it's more of an advocacy group where we just did the big latch on.
Right.
Did you hear about that?
Right. Yes, we had that in Synapse. So that was held at the Bassett Center.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And breastfeeding mothers were invited to come and breastfeed their babies there in the mall.
For 1 minute. It's an international synchronized breastfeeding event. It's like a Olympics of breastfeeding. And it started in New Zealand in 2005. Just, you know, people wanted to like celebrate World Breastfeeding Month, which is August every year. And I guess they had like 20 people that year. And then since then, it took off like crazy. And now it's worldwide. And we had 14,000 some women breastfeed their babies worldwide. We had a big number, though. We had 93.
That's a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is.
And it did go up from 88, I believe, last year. So it's going up every year. It's awesome to see it.
Yeah. And they're right there in Bassett Center where you can – the idea is to normalize it.
Right.
You know, to like have kids walk by with their skateboards and not even look.
So how are we doing, Libby, on breastfeeding being normalized?
It's not there yet, but we're working on it. What do you think, Ceci?
I think it's getting a lot better. Just walking around anywhere, I see more moms breastfeeding in public, either covered up or not covered up. It's awesome, though. I see it a lot. I was at my son's swimming practice the other day, and there's a mom breastfeeding there. So I think it's getting there. It's getting a lot better.
Yeah, they sell a lot of products, too. Like, there's really cute, you know, little cover-ups that you can use.
They're awesome. They're super cute.
Yeah, there's blouses you can buy that are configured just to open up a little bit. There's covers. There's boppies. There's pillows. There's all kinds of things. But really, you know what you need? A baby and a breast. That's it.
Can you give us another myth that you talked about in your article?
It's painful. That's a common myth that everybody thinks, well, it's painful. And oftentimes Ceci and I were actually talking about this. Oftentimes if your family members haven't breastfed, they're afraid. You know, maybe it was their mother or their grandmother, the last person in their family that breastfed, and they'll say, well, you know, it's just painful. It's part of motherhood and it just hurts, and just suck it up and live with it. And it actually usually is a sign of problem. If somebody comes into the baby cafe and tells me, well, I'm in a lot of pain, to me, I would never say that's normal. It's usually a reason to explore what's going on.
Ceci, did you experience any pain?
I did. I did experience pain with both my babies. So we did.
But it wasn't for the whole breastfeeding time.
Oh, no.
Time,
it was just the beginning. And then I found the baby cafe and I got help right away. So it was just a matter of getting the correct latch. And I guess me learning what that correct latch was and looked like to make sure that I maintained it so that I can continue. And, I mean, a couple of weeks practicing with a good latch and baby just breastfed perfectly after that. So.
Yeah. Did you – well, I know for me with the first baby, I scabbed up even. I mean, it really hurt. Did you have any of that, Ceci?
With my – actually, I think with both of them I did. And I think it's just part of – a little bit of breastfeeding, you know, like your nipples are very tender. All those hormones are everywhere. So I think at the beginning it's a little, you know, you're like, trying to get used to it. But correcting whatever the problem is right away, I think that's just the key. And getting that support and help as well.
Yeah. It went away. And it didn't last long. But what I read in your article was that it's normal for a newborn to lose a little bit of weight after they're born and in the hospital. And that actually made me feel better because I felt really guilty in the beginning.
Because there was a weight
my
loss.
Baby lost a few pounds, and I thought it's because I was so sore from breastfeeding that I maybe wasn't doing it enough, and so I felt so guilty. But you're saying in your article that that's normal.
Well, the Academy of Pediatrics says up to 10%, and actually, the truth is, in a natural circumstance, which basically doesn't exist anymore. You know, like when women were still hunters and gatherers, there probably wasn't that big of a weight loss. But now, because most births are hospital births and mothers are given lots of IV fluids, which actually before the baby is separated from the mom with, you know, cutting the cord, they get swollen too. So then they urinate and all of that liquid comes out and people think it's weight loss. But it probably – some of it isn't. Some of it's just like the hospital birth, which, of course, saves lives. Not advocating having your baby in a rice paddy. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that that's the other side of it. And then, of course, they weigh the baby right then at birth, the second that baby's out on the scale. And then weigh them again maybe 12 hours later, 24 hours later, and everybody's alarmed.
Okay.
And it really is normal, up to 10%.
Okay. Yeah, I remember crying. I mean, because you're emotional after you have a baby. And I cried because my baby had lost weight.
And it worries you. I mean, just seeing those numbers, like every time you go to the doctor, because you know, like they're going to tell you something, or you just worry. Like just seeing those numbers, I think, just worries you as a mom because you don't know exactly what they mean.
Am I harming my baby?
Right.
Yeah.
And what can dads do? I'm sure there are some dads listening or grandparents. What can they do to help support a breastfeeding mother?
Well, what do you think?
Well, what helped you?
Well, you know what? My husband, when I was sore, he went to the store and he bought all these products that were supposed to help, you know, alleviate pain. And I really appreciated that because you don't want to go to the store,
right.
You know?
And true. Those things help. I mean, just when they see you in the position where you're like, I can't do this anymore, if they take the baby for like 10 minutes, here, let me hold the baby, you rest a little bit. I think that helps. Anything helps. Anything other than being, I don't know, sarcastic just helps overall.
Yeah, or even doing the laundry helped, right. Or cooking food helped, you know?
Yeah. But the truth is it is a burden. And women who are successful at breastfeeding are very determined and very persistent because it really is all on you. It pretty much is until the baby can be entertained in some other way. Because breastfeeding is so much more than food. There's so much more to it. It's this intimate act between these two connected human beings, and it's psychological.
Yeah,
and
I read that the distance between the mother's face and the baby's face when he or she is breastfeeding is the exact distance that the baby can see when they're really little.
Right. That's the focal length of a newborn infant.
I thought that's awesome. Yeah.
There's a lot of cool stuff like that.
Yeah. Give us another cool fact about, you know, how breastfeeding is and why it's important.
Well, it seems to increase baby's IQ later in life. I don't like to overemphasize that. It's replicable in the studies. You can prove it. Because I don't want to make people feel bad who are formula feeding because so many people try so hard and it just – they need to supplement. But I think that the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine says an IQ point for every month. that you're exclusively breastfeeding. So maybe up to a year, but you wouldn't exclusively breastfeed up to a year. You could get a 10 to 12 IQ points, which can be really significant. And that's one that gets dads.
Right.
I've discovered in the baby cafe, when you go through all the benefits, you know, it's better for their – they won't get many ear infections, and they're less likely to have obesity later in life, and they're less likely to have diabetes and asthma and allergies, and they're more bonded. The one that causes dad's ears to perk up is that IQ one.
Okay. I also read somewhere long ago that breastfeeding helps the mother to lose weight, baby weight.
I'm not sure that's always the case.
Right.
I think – it's in the literature. I've seen it for years. I've been doing this for almost 30 years. So, yeah, I've seen it too. But I think some mothers are actually kind of disappointed when they don't get skinny right away.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know for you, but for me, I was hungry all the time and I was thirsty all the time. Like, I would breastfeed and it's like, why am I so hungry?
Well, a baby's taking all your calories.
Right. Well, they do take at least 500 a day. So that's a lot. But then your body has a natural capacity to store fat too when you're making milk.
Okay.
So as a survival mechanism for the human infant, so you might actually not
lose as much as you want.
You might not get back into your size 6 jeans right away.
In case you're joining us, we are talking with Libby Berkley. She is an international board certified lactation consultant, and Ceci Vasquez, she is a mother and a breastfeeding peer counselor at the Baby Cafe in El Paso.
One issue that I think women do need to hear is that there is no reason to stop at 1 year, because I think what happens is the big medical organizations, the Academy of Pediatrics and all the major organizations say breastfeed for a year is recommended. But it's not you have to stop at a year. So sometimes I think people misinterpret that as after that milk, the milk is no good. I've actually heard that a lot.
I actually hear a lot of moms say, oh, well, I'm starting solid food or introducing more foods to baby at 6 months, and they feel they should stop at 6 months as well. And it's like, no, wait. You can continue breastfeeding even though you do the baby food as well.
Right.
So.
And well, up to 2 years you can
– okay.
I mean, the World Health Organization says as long as the mother and baby mutually desire. That's the way they word it. And it would say – they say it 2 years or as long as they want. The truth is, in the United States of America, women are working, and it's hard. After you go back to work, you have to pump, and you have to have a amiable boss who will let you go for break time, even though it's part of the new law, the new Affordable Care Act, that you have to let breastfeeding moms go and pump and have break time. That's part of the new law. It doesn't mean that your supervisor is, you know, educated on that law or has done it before.
Or well, you have a meeting at that time and you have to be at your meeting. It's not like, oh, you know what?
Exactly.
We're going to cancel the meeting because
– well, like yesterday in the baby cafe, there was this woman and she's a nurse and she works in an emergency room. And she said – she laughed when I told her that because she said, oh, yeah, I'm going to stop putting a tracheotomy in a patient because it's time to go pump, you know. So there are logistical issues for a lot of people making it more than a year.
Does the Affordable Health Care Act, or is there another resource that can help employers provide, give them things that they can do to make a breastfeeding mom or a pumping mother, you know, more comfortable or, you know, support them?
There's the Mother Friendly Initiative going on right now. I believe WIC was really strong into it. When I was working there, we were really going to businesses and going out there. And everything – and the only things that they need to provide is a safe room, not a restroom, where the mom is able to pump, a private space where she can pump.
Should the door be locked?
No. I mean, you can always back your chair up to the door.
Right. I mean, somewhere where the mom would feel comfortable and she can safely pump. A place nearby where she can wash her
parts
and everything, and then a little refrigerator where she can store them as well. So, I mean,
that mother-friendly initiative actually is something that the – remember I mentioned the BBC, the Bi-National Breastfeeding Coalition? Mm-hmm. They're actually going out and doing presentations to big organizations who would like to become mother-friendly, which is what Ceci was just talking about. And I think Socorro Independent School District just did it. And some other large employers in El Paso have done it. And it's really as simple as she says.
Mm-hmm. And once they have that established, there's a website where once your business does that, you can go on there and have your business
promoted.
There. Yeah, promoted as a breastfeeding friendly work. Place, I think, is what it's called. I can't remember off the top of my mind what it's called because it's been a year since I was working on it. But the state, I think it's through the state of Texas, through the health department.
It is. It's through WIC. Mm-hmm. And they have that Mother Friendly Worksites website, and so you can get listed there, and it's kind of...
I remember breastfeeding pumping, actually, when I was at work, and I was in a room. They gave me a room. Mm-hmm. but it didn't have a lock, and I remember it was a construction guy, or he was in the office doing some kind of work, and he opened the door.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
I mean, I had myself kind of covered, sort of. I wasn't expecting anyone to just walk in, and so...
So I take it back about the lock.
Yeah, I mean, there should be a lock.
Yeah, there should
be a lock. Through the Mother Friendly, we did hand out little door hangers that says, please do not disturb.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
session true. Or something like
that's
that.
That's right.
I wish I'd have thought of that.
I remember when I opened my first lactation room at Texas Tech, but when I first started Mother Friendly there, it was the year 2000. So that was 14 years ago. And Texas Tech has been Mother Friendly since then. But the room that I used was a cubicle. And the wall didn't go all the way to the ceiling. And there was a woman in there, a coworker, one day pumping. And there was a guy on a ladder fixing the light fixture. And she was so embarrassed. And she kind of covered herself and came running to my office and said, Libby, can you talk to him? And I did.
Yeah, that guy who walked in on me, I don't even think he realized what I was doing. But I was embarrassed still, you know.
Because it's still, I mean, breasts are very sexualized in this culture. You know, it's not something that we associate with feeding babies. I mean, we do, but not everybody does.
Yeah.
And so it's embarrassing to be exposed in public for some people, not for everybody.
Right. Yeah. Can you give us one more myth that before we have to go? We have about a couple of minutes left.
Oh, there's so many.
Were there any old wives' tales that maybe are cultural?
Oh, yeah. How about si la mamá tiene un coraje, la leche será agria? You remember that one?
Yeah.
If you get really scared, your milk will go bad. And, of course, that's a myth. But it's something that women really – actually not just people from Mexico and Central America, but it's kind of in other cultures too.
Right. Really? So if you get scared,
yeah, it's not
your
true.
Milk goes
Let me just be clear. It is not true.
Okay.
You can be scared. You can be angry. And your milk is fine. You may be really angry at your husband, but your milk is okay. what are some other ones? One of the ones that I did want to address, and I think I did well enough, was that thing about 1 year. The milk does not go bad, ever. Some people breastfeed for 3-4 years.
Yeah. You know, you've heard those stories of extreme, 5-year-old breastfeeding still.
Yeah.
So it must be still – the milk must still be good if a 5-year-old is still
– Yeah.
All right. Well, you guys, it was a good discussion. I hope that mothers out there found this chat helpful.
Well, let me mention the website so that if people want to, say somebody out there listening wants to become an advocate and join, they can go to www.borderbreastfeeding, all one word, .org. And that's the BBC's website. And they can come, join our group, and we've been
doing information as well. I mean, where the baby cafes are, the hours, locations.
We have baby cafes in Juarez.
Okay, that's it for El Paso Primetime. Dennis was absent today. We're thinking about him, but thank you for listening. And until next time, bye bye.